From the Badgers to Whitewater, from Concordia to Carroll, some of the best college football is played right here in the state of Wisconsin. Alongside the professor, Dan Underberg, and our producer, the Polish pipe bomb, Jeff Orlowski, I'm Don Wachilis. This is the College Football Show, and it starts right now. I got a packed house yelling, bring them out, bring them out. I'm a hot girl yelling, bring them out, bring them out. All the dope boys yelling, bring them out, bring them out. The back day yelling, bring them out, bring them out. Mic check, 1, 2, 1, 2. You want to beat with the team. Once again, welcome in to the College Football Show right here on 105.7 FM, The Fan, alongside the professor Dan Underberg and our producer Jeff Orlowski. Good to have you with us once again on this Thursday evening as we get set to talk about college football throughout the state of Wisconsin. Real quick, coming up Sunday afternoon, December 2nd, we make the move, gentlemen. We'll start talking about college basketball at that point. It'll be Sunday afternoons from noon to 2. I got to say this real quick before we get into college football. What a great night Tuesday with that tip-off classic ESPN. But I want to say this. Zion Williamson, unbelievable, 28 points, 23 minutes, whatever the stats bear out. But if I hear one more person in the national media talk about Duke undefeated, who's going to beat Duke? Duke, national championship, Duke, shut up. Just shut up. The best thing about college basketball is the fact that you can have a tip-off classic like that, and it really becomes meaningless. Because as we start getting into January, February, when the games really do matter and we start talking about, you know, the March Madness and the birth in what I'll call the playoffs, the tournament and what have you, when things matter. I mean, if you know anything about Calipari and you follow college basketball, it's the fact that he could care less till really around Christmas time.
Yeah, absolutely.
He looks at these games kind of like collecting his baseline data, how he's going to get his team to improve. And then you get around Christmas time, and that's really when he wants to throw things into overdrive and win. So, yes, they took a drubbing. Yes, Duke looks incredible. But they're not going undefeated. I guess the next day I was just going bonkers. Zion Williamson, the next LeBron James. Is he better than LeBron? The kid is 18. He's played one college game. Relax, everybody. He's a great player, but relax. There's a whole lot of basketball to play. All right, this is the College Football Show, so let's let's talk football real quick, even though, again, Daniel, the Badgers last week with a nice win against Rutgers, a game that we thought they should win and hoped they would win, and they did win.
Right.
But you texted me in the middle of the game, and it's exactly where I want to go with it. It doesn't look like the team that we thought, once again, the way we thought they should roll over Rutgers. The score is one thing, but watching the game progress was another, and it just, again, this team has yet to find its stride.
No, it hasn't. It was that game against Rutgers was so boring. I mean, and you'd had two teams that really weren't. We had one really bad team, and then you had the Badger team that just wasn't and hasn't found its zone yet, for whatever you want to call it. They can't fire on all cylinders. It seems like they're always kind of misfiring on an important play. You know, obviously their quarterback was out with a concussion again, but it just seems to me, you know, for example, when Rutgers needed a long third down, they got it.
Yeah.
Again, Wisconsin's secondary got gashed again. So, man, this is our team this year. This is who they are.
It is our team. Jonathan Taylor rushes for 208 yards. He gets 3 touchdowns. And if there was anything to really stand up and kind of hoot and holler about, it was the fact that the running game got itself back on track after a couple of weeks of really looking somewhat sluggish, and especially against Northwestern, looking awful, to say the least. But you alluded to the fact that Horningbrook goes down again with a concussion. He's going through concussion protocol once again. Jack Cohn is going to step up. And Jeff, I guess it's what is going to take place right now with Horningbrook is the fact that we've got a young man right now who seems to be right at this moment prone to concussion, and I don't know what we're going to get now from this point throughout the remainder of the season.
Yeah, two things that I've got on that. One is that, you know, the Badgers wanted to basically redshirt Jack Cohn this year. this is going to be his third game.
Yes.
So if he, you know, he's running out of time. And if Hornibrook keeps with these concussions, you know, or if he misses an extended period of time, then that goes out the window. The second thing I've got, and this is the important one, is that, okay, so two concussions in 3 weeks. This might not be a bad thing for the Badgers.
Right. Why, okay? Jeff?
Well, okay, we all hear about the guy that gets struck by lightning, and now all of a sudden he speaks fluent Mandarin Chinese, right? So maybe getting his brain scrambled a little bit will work out better, and he can come back as a serviceable, productive quarterback.
Only Orlowski.
Possible. I'm just saying. There's a chance.
I'm just thinking, Jeffrey. Yeah, he brings out the whole lightning thing. I'm thinking, all right, superpowers? No, it's like Mandarin Chinese.
Well, yeah, you know, some kind of superpower, and, you know, hopefully that happens with Hornibrook. And you never know.
Yeah, the thing is, as you said with Jack Cohn, the fact that I think the ability to redshirt him and have him for one more year would obviously benefit the Badgers beyond measure. But we're in a situation right now, Dan, you don't have much of a choice. You got to put him out there. And my only hope is that this week against Penn State, going into a hostile environment, and let me preface that real quick. In the next segment, we're going to talk to John McConigal of the Center Daily newspaper there in Happy Valley. So we'll get an opportunity to kind of preview this upcoming Penn State game here in the next segment. But when Cohn was playing the Wildcats down in Northwestern, it looked like Paul Chris took, I don't know, 3/4 of the playbook and just set it aside and was only operating with 25% of what they normally do. I'm hoping that this kid then feels much more comfortable at this point and we can expand the playbook, because when they narrowed that playbook and they shut down the run offensively, it reminded me, not to that extent, but it almost looked like that LSU-Alabama game last weekend that we'll talk about a little bit later in the show, where LSU was hanging in there defensively, and that's kind of where the Badgers were. But offensively, it didn't matter what they did, and Bergeron said that in the press conference, afterwards. He's like, we spread them out, we bring them in, we run one tight end, we run two tight ends, we run four receivers. We couldn't find anything to get any sort of traction against Alabama. Well, that's how the offense was against Northwestern a couple weeks ago, is no matter what Wisconsin, it seemed, tried to do with that minimal set of plays that they were utilizing, they just had no answer to whatever scheme was being put forth against them defensively by Northwestern.
No, Cohn definitely looked more at peace, more at home when he came in the second half for the last game against Rutgers, and you could just see it. It's so funny watching body language when you have guys like they walk in for the first time, they have a big start, then they come back and again later on. He definitely looked more in control and just better, in a better place. When I look at Hornibrook right now, and moving aside from, you know, the potential issues of the concussion, number one, the first thing that strikes me is it looks like he's lost his confidence. And they can go back and forth, and they can tell you, and they can scream from the top of the hills that I've still got my confidence. I'm not buying it. And the other part of it right now is when the pocket breaks down, that game looks like it's moving too fast for him. You know, it's very difficult for him to make those decisions.
Which I think ties exactly into what you just alluded to, is the fact that he does look like a quarterback who has lost his confidence.
Yeah.
Because he looks as if everything that he's trying to do has to be perfect. And anytime you've got somebody back there who's trying to, there's nothing wrong with striving for perfection, but when you're feeling like everything has to be perfect because you're feeling like your job is on the line, your confidence is shot, that you're trying to rebuild things, you know, in that kind of scenario, it just ends up going the opposite way, and it creates situations where you end up making more mistakes as opposed to just being relaxed and going out there and throwing the rock around when the time comes. And knowing that, you know, once in a while it will be incomplete, once in a while you might throw a pick, but when you put that added pressure on yourself, that's what I get out of Hornibrook right now, where I'm trying to be perfect on every single thing that I'm doing, from calling the sets to getting up to the line and maybe optioning out or whatever it might be, and that that idea that I've got to be perfect in every single aspect of what I'm doing, I think, is really eroding at the confidence which you were just speaking to.
Yeah, and I would take it one step further. Yeah, there are moments where I see what you're talking about, where he'll let the ball fly and he's trying to be perfect, and there's but now what scares me a little bit more is every now and again I'll see him go back for a pass, and to me it senses like, man, I sure hope this works.
Yes.
You know, and that's where just kind of where he's at right now, where I think his confidence is just, man, nothing is working. I can't get these balls in. It's not happening.
Dan, we've talked about this on many occasions. When he rears back and just lets it rip,
mm-hmm.
and he puts a little zip on the ball, which I think then again goes to confidence level, he makes some nice plays.
Right.
When he tries to put touch on the ball, even when he's trying to thread the needle against Rutgers, there were times when he was putting air underneath when he really should have been, in baseball terms, just rearing back and throwing the fastball. He's trying to put air underneath again to make that perfect type throw, and that's where it seems like he gets into trouble. And then when those mistakes start happening, they compile against somebody who right now just doesn't look comfortable being in the backfield.
The other thing that I'm going to throw in there, Don, is that, and I'm not going to throw all the weight of the Badgers' failure right now on Hornibrook, because when we talk about quarterbacks, oftentimes when we talk about the ones that have found that kind of zen of being a quarterback, they're throwing the catch. And I'm not certainly not saying that Hornibrook is doing that, but what I'm noticing now is that the receivers – Hornibrook threw some passes, and I don't mean just the ones that are just being dropped, right, between the numbers, but passes that are closely covered by the defense, but they're still there, and yet it looks to me like the receivers are in many cases waiting for the ball to get to them. They're not making that move out towards the ball.
They're not going
to grab
at,
that ball.
You know, you always hear people talk about receivers needing to go to the high point, mm-hmm. going up and getting it.
Yeah.
And you're right. It's waiting for it to come to them instead of them going to it, which in some cases, especially when we're talking interceptions, that can be the difference with a defensive back stepping in and then assuming the position you had as an offensive receiver and then making those interceptions, which then again become costly for somebody like Alex, who's trying to, in essence, reestablish himself as the leader and general of this offense.
Yeah, there's just too many opportunities now where I'm seeing these. I won't call them quick outs, but he'll take a 4 or 5 step drop. He'll go through his progression as quickly as he can and let the ball fly. And it's tight man on man coverage. It's tight one on one. There's no question about it. It's a difficult catch for the receiver, but the ball, they're waiting for that ball to get there. They're in their spot. They're waiting for it to float into their arms. And that split second allows that defensive back to react and to move towards either the receiver or the ball. And I think it's one of the challenges that's hurting Hornibrook right now.
See, I wouldn't even say that Alex appears to me like he's going through any progressions. It almost seems to me like he's got himself locked into where he wants to go with the football, and it's the first sight. I'm looking at my number one option. And that's exactly where I'm going. Mm-hmm. I don't see Alex really going through a second and third option. And then again, it kind of goes back to the offensive line. This offensive line has not performed consistently the way I think many of us thought they would. I think at times they shine, and then there are other times where mistakes, whether it's due to injury and guys having to step up and fill in and whatever the case may be, where Hornibrook really hasn't, in some cases, had a great deal of time. He goes back and he plants that back foot like he's getting ready to throw, and he's either running for his life or he's getting his clock cleaned, which is, no pun intended, why we're in our second set of concussion protocol.
Right. Yeah. I look at this offensive line, and there's no question they're cleaning up when they have the opportunity to run the ball. I mean, Jonathan Taylor is doing great. Taiwan Deal is doing great. And the run game is not the issue. The problem is, and this is football 101, when a defense realizes and they can strategize for how they're going to play you and how they're going to beat you, and now they're challenging the quarterbacks of Wisconsin to win the game, and they're not doing it. They'll put 8, 9 in the box. The Wisconsin offensive line is still winning most of the battles, but you can't expect them to get every third down. They're not going to get every second down. and then it puts the the offensive line back on its heels. Look, I'm sorry, they're not a strong passing offensive line. They're not.
Not at you the, know well, yeah they haven't they,
they
haven't
been
evolved
all year.
Into it.
No, and they're getting all the they got all the love in the media because of their size and their bulk and what they could do with their run game. Fair enough, but it's always talking. When that is put forward, it's always about, hey, the offensive line, and it's assumed you're talking about the total package. In this case, you can't. Not a Madison.
Yeah, there were two instances in the game against Rutgers that give me a bit of confidence going into this game against Penn State at Happy Valley, which I think a couple of weeks ago the atmosphere would have been even more intense. I noticed a little bit of a step back this past
sure.
week after the losses that Penn State has incurred. But the fact that Cone was able to convert on two third down situations within a drive, one was a 13-yard pass to Jake Ferguson on a third and 12. And the
which
other,
was a great pass, by the way. I remember
right.
that was a nice throw.
And the other was to Danny Davis for 12 yards on a third and 7.
Mm-hmm.
Those type of plays were not being made the week prior against Northwestern. So maybe we're looking at a young man now who's starting to gain a little bit of confidence, because you can prepare all you want. You can prepare like a starter all you want. Somewhere in the back of your mind, you know going into the game, as hard as you've prepared, you're not the starter. That when we come out of that tunnel the last time, Alex Hornibrook is running over by the offensive coordinator. My job is to put my baseball cap back on and grab a clipboard. I mean, as much as you want to get yourself ready to go and can be ready to go, there's that little thing in the back of your mind that says you're still the backup. But then when that time comes, there's an acclimation process. You've got to get used to being out there. You've got to get used to having these big guys chasing you down and being able to hit. I'm not wearing the red jersey anymore in practice
right.
where they come up, they tap me, and somebody's yelling and screaming about a missed block. Now these guys, if they want to, can level me, so to speak. So I'm hoping that with the Northwestern game, the second half of Rutgers, it all sense and purposes looks like it's Cone's his team at Happy Valley against Penn State. I just hope now the confidence level has built and we see on third down and whatever. That
yeah.
he has the ability to make the conversion.
I would say that, to me, there always seems like there's a level of just freedom with being a with being the backup quarterback, because as you were saying, yeah, they you know that that Hornibrook or their starter is going to be floating around on the sideline somewhere waiting to get back in, but you know, okay, so then this is your time. And what's the worst that can happen? You get yanked,
right?
You know,
right.
You are not going to lose your starting quarterback position. You're going to go back to being number two, and I think that allows a little bit more relaxation when you're in there. You're not worried about losing something.
Well, yeah, I get that. I also wonder now with somebody like Cone, you're in the process of also auditioning now for the future, though, and the fact that every year, regardless of where you're at, you know, you look at Alabama. You had a quarterback that took you to the national championship. And what did you do? You recruited a quarterback who's now taken over and bumped you into that number two spot. So you're still in the process of auditioning. I guess really what I want to see in Happy Valley is a little bit of confidence. Once I'm just waiting for this team to get some sort of traction, some sort of momentum, something that we sit back and go, even if they lose, but you sit back and go, ha ha, see, that's what we thought. That's what we thought this year was going to be like, at least on the offensive side of the ball. Jeff tells us it's time for us to take our first break of the evening. On the other side of this break, we're going to be joined by John McGonigal from the Center Daily newspaper there in Happy Valley. He covers Penn State for Center Daily, and we'll talk with him next. This is the College Football Show right here on 105.7 FM, The Fan.
Warm it up, Chris.
I'm about to.
Warm it up, Chris.
That's what I was born to do.
Warm it up, Chris.
I'm about to.
Warm it up, Chris.
That's what I was born to do.
Well, once again, welcome back in to the College Football Show right here on 105.7 FM, The Fan. As We get ready for this week's upcoming matchup between the Wisconsin Badgers and the Nittany Lions of Penn State. Right now, we jump to the Great Midwest Bank Hotline as we are pleased to be joined by John McGonigal, who covers the Penn State Nittany Lions for the Center Daily newspaper. John, how you doing tonight?
I'm great. How are you?
We're doing fantastic. Thanks for taking some time out of your Thursday evening to join us here on the College Football Show. John, so the Badgers headed to Happy Valley. The Badgers with a kind of mundane win against Rutgers and a tough loss for Penn State. On Penn State's side, I want to start at the quarterback position and talk to us briefly about how you think the injury to Trace McSorley, A, affected his play last week, and where does he stand going into this Badger game for this Saturday's matchup?
Yeah, look, that's a storyline that's kind of on everyone's lips here around State College is, what's the deal with Trace McSorley? Is he all right to go? And, you know, at Michigan, I think it was pretty clear that his mobility, at least laterally with that right knee brace, was it was affecting him. And there's no worse team to have limited lateral mobility than against a front four like Michigan with guys like, you know, Winovich and Rashawn Gary and all them. So it was clear that his mobility was hindered. That's why they brought in Tommy Stevens down 21-0. To kind of provide a spark, Penn State's backup quarterback. And then they flip-flopped, throughout the game, which was a kind of weird thing. You know, both quarterbacks were left in the dark. But, look, I would fully expect Trace McSorley to start on Saturday against Wisconsin. He was, fine, looked fine in practice this week when we were able to, check him out on Wednesday. I wouldn't be surprised if you see Tommy Stevens, whether that's a series or two, to get him in there to change things up or – they have this thing called the Lion Package where they basically use Tommy Stevens, the backup quarterback, as kind of like a running back, wide receiver, tight end deal. So I wouldn't be surprised to see number two on the field. He's a versatile player, and they like to use him. But Penn State needs to establish some rhythm on offense. So that guy who's going to do it is McSorley.
Well, that seems to be a commonality with Penn State and the Badgers, the fact that they need some rhythm offensively. Jack Cohn slated, at least at this point right now, John, to start for the Badgers, the backup quarterback for Wisconsin. The defense for Penn State has been pretty remarkable this year, been pretty sound, playing extremely well, especially with the pass rush. And yet last week against Michigan, it just seemed like they spent a whole lot of time on the field and got worn down a little bit. How's Penn State going to kind of rebound defensively, and what do you expect from them defensively coming up against the Badgers?
Yeah, look, you mentioned it. They were on the field a lot at Michigan. They faced 69 plays, 52 of which were rushes by Michigan. A lot of that Caron Higdon just running down their throats. And it wasn't just last week either. The week before against Iowa, they faced 88 plays. And the week before that against Indiana, they faced 100. So this defense has been worn down in recent weeks. But like you said, they've held up. I mean, against Michigan, it was a 14-0 game with a minute left. And a lot of the credit, all the credit really goes to that defense. The offense didn't do anything against the Wolverines, but it was, guys like Jan Johnson, linebacker, and, Micah Parsons and Cam Brown, who was swarming to the football, at the Big House. And then you mentioned that front four, Yetur Gross-Matos, number 99, only a sophomore. He's got 23 tackles, 7 tackles for loss, and 5 sacks in his last 3 games. The kid is coming on strong. And then you've got also number 48, Sharif Miller, who I think is an NFL prospect for the 2019 draft. And, a lot of depth behind that, too. Shaka Toney, number 18, keep an eye on him. He's a really good pass rusher. So, yeah, this defense, after being gashed by Pitt early in the year, I mean, they gave up 214 rushing yards in the first half to Pitt in week 2. A week after that, or a couple weeks after that, rather, they gave up 7.9 rushing yards, per attempt in the first half against Illinois. So it wasn't a great start to the season for this Penn State defense, but they're really coming on strong. But that is one thing I'm looking at, is does this unit get worn down as the game goes on with Jonathan Taylor, kind of just dictating things?
Well, that, again, for us is going to be key because we have a feeling with Cohn at quarterback, we're going to see a heavy dose of Taylor and Deal and everybody else at the running back position. So you talked about in essence, the front seven. How's life in the secondary at Penn State? Because I think if Wisconsin's going to have a chance, Cone seemed to have the playbook kind of shortened for him when he started against Northwestern. Somebody's going to have to feel confident enough to expand it a little bit and let him throw the rock around in order to loosen that defense up, for the running backs to maybe capitalize and keep that defense on the field and begin to wear them down a little bit. So what's the secondary like there for Penn State?
Yeah, it's weird because, you know, the secondary, you know, if you ask any casual, you know, Penn State fan, the only thing they'll remember with the secondary is the lapses that they've had, you know, in the fourth quarter in the opener against App State, when Appalachian State put up 28 points in the fourth quarter, it had a lot to do with the tackling in the secondary. When you look at how Ohio State came back and won 27-26, you know, it was a screen pass that went 24 yards because, you know, the Penn State secondary couldn't tackle. And, you know, Imani Owurariye, who has had a great year, number 21, for those Badger fans to keep an eye on Saturday, he's had a great year, but he gave up the touchdown late in the fourth quarter against Michigan State, you know, in a game where Penn State lost. So, you know, yes, Penn State fans that question this year, they might question the secondary. I like what they've been able to do in recent weeks. I like Imani a lot. I think his game translates really well to the next level. He's a ball hawk, has a lot of interceptions, led the team last year. John Reed, number 29, he suffered a season-ending knee injury last spring and missed all of 2017. And admittedly, he was a little rusty in the first three, four games here, but he's really come on strong recently. And they've got a lot of confidence in number five, Tariq Castro Fields. He's essentially their third starter. They use John Reed in the slot and then put Castro Fields out on the outside, and they like him a lot. He's a sophomore, played a lot as a true freshman last year. So I like the corners. I wouldn't be surprised if you see Garrett Taylor, number 17, the safety, come down into the box more with, you know, Wisconsin probably just running the ball a lot.
Sure.
With Jonathan Taylor. So, you know, that's maybe an opportunity for Cone, or if it's Hornibrook back there, to maybe hit a big one if 17 is down in the box a bit. But I like, for the most part, with, you know, the last few weeks, I like what the secondary has been able to do.
You know, it's the one thing that, at least at this point, John, we're not too concerned about is with the Badgers throwing the ball. The Badgers have only passed 217 times, which is the second lowest total in the Big Ten. So it's a heavy dose of running the football. And if we ever get back and start throwing a rock around a little bit, it'll be surprising, I think, to us all. We're talking to John McGonigal over there in Happy Valley as we're previewing the upcoming matchup between the Badgers and the Nittany Lions of Penn State. John, what is the feeling around Happy Valley when it comes to James Franklin? We know what's happened there in the past and all of the things with Penn State and how it's evolved since the headlines of a few years back. And James Franklin, I think, really has done a nice job kind of allowing that to go by the wayside, something that's in the rearview mirror and not necessarily something that gets put into the forefront much. But I'm wondering, with some of the close losses that have happened this year, what's the feeling like in Happy Valley when it comes to your head coach?
Yeah, when you look at it that way, you know, just in this season in a bubble, there's frustration amongst the fans. I mean, look, this team entered the year with, you know, college, although I think the expectations might have been a little bit too high entering this year for Penn State. I picked them to go
9-3. We know that feeling.
Yes.
I picked them to go 9-3 before the year because there were these issues. If you were paying attention to this team, you know, they lost so many seniors on defense. They lost Joe Moorhead, their offensive coordinator. They lost other coaches on staff, their running backs coach, their wide receivers coach. Obviously lost Saquon Barkley, Deshaun Hamilton, Mike Gesicki. All these guys who have made so many plays and made so many key decisions for this program over the last 2 years that it was going to be tough to get over. Now, you know, when you have Trace McSorley coming back and you know, the build up to this year was, hey, they have all their big dogs at home. They have Wisconsin, Iowa, Michigan State, and Ohio State at home. This is a college football playoff team possibly. But yeah, and I guess, you know, I would call it a disappointing season, though, in a way, because of the way that they've lost those games, the way that they lost to Ohio State when it was a collapse. I mean, they held a fourth quarter lead and they collapsed. They held a fourth quarter lead against Michigan State and they lost. So many of these games, you know, dating back to the Rose Bowl, really, you know, they've had fourth quarter leads, and they haven't been able to really hold on to them. You know, they held on to them, you know, against Iowa last year and against some lesser opponents, but when you look at the big dogs, they haven't done that. And I guess that is where a lot of the frustration comes from with the fans, you know, and a lot of timeout management issues as well. That's been a theme, you know, in Franklin's tenure since he got here. But the reasonable fan will then, you know, after the season, kind of take a step back and look, hey, they won a Big Ten title in 2016 before anyone thought they would. You know, they have back-to-back 11-win seasons, and they've got a chance to get to back, you know, to another 10-win season here this season. So, you know, I think the reasonable fan will tell you, hey, James Franklin has done a great job for this program over the last 5 years, but it's understandable for those who are frustrated with this season, the way that these games have been lost.
John, we were sitting here smiling while you were going through that entire scenario, because I think the parallels between Penn State and Wisconsin, what the hype was leading into this season, and all of the things that you described, if you just took Penn State out and replaced the verbiage with Wisconsin, it's just unbelievable how those parallels have existed. John, we're pushed up against a break. Real quick, with the Badgers coming in, what do you think the outcome is in Happy Valley this weekend?
I picked Penn State 24-14. I could see that score easily flipped. Just, you know, like you said, the way that these two teams are coming into this game, a couple of 6-3 teams that had more expectations before the year than what they're really playing for here. I mean, it seems like it's a play-in bowl, you know, play-in game for the Citrus Bowl. But I think Penn State kind of gets things on track. I like what the defense has been able to do. And if they're really able to make things one-dimensional and force Cone or Hornibrook to beat them, I think they've got a pretty good chance.
Good gosh, the losers headed to the Red Box Bowl, for goodness sakes. John, thank you so much for taking some time out this evening. Enjoy the game on Saturday. And again, appreciate your insight with regards to Penn State.
Absolutely, guys. Have a great night.
All right, you as well. That's John McGonigal from the Center Daily, the newspaper there in Happy Valley. He covers Penn State football for that particular newspaper, and we appreciate him joining us on the Great Midwest Bank Hotline. Time for us to take a break. We'll wrap things up with the Wisconsin Badgers and then talk a little D3 after that, and we'll do it all next. This is the College Football Show right here on 105.7 FM, The Fan. Again, welcome in to the College Football Show right here on 105.7 FM, The Fan, as we continue to preview this week's upcoming matchup between the Wisconsin Badgers and the Penn State Nittany Lions. Say that five times fast on Thursday evening.
Not
get
gonna
you
happen.
In a whole lot of trouble. All right. Bad news coming out of Madison this evening as nose tackle Olive Sagapulu is going to be out for the rest of the year as he's headed in for surgery. And with a defense, Daniel, that has struggled pretty much all season but has begun the process, I think, of growing and evolving, and we've talked about they are starting to look more confident, I guess is what I'm saying. Yeah, they're still not making all of the plays that they did as they did last year when you had more seniors, more leadership going on that side of the ball, but confidence wise they just seem to now be in position. They, you know, everything seems to be kind of fitting where we're not seeing it on the offensive side of the ball. But then to lose a player of his caliber is just got to be a kick in the tail for not only the rest of those guys who play on that side of the ball, but for the defensive coordinator as well.
Yeah, I mean, 75% of your expected starting defensive line is out. Yeah. And that starts with the two defensive ends at the beginning of the season not coming back for the season, and then Sagapulu is out, and yeah, that's a a really tough situation to handle. I look at this game against Penn State, and I just don't have a lot of hope. And here's why: we're going against a quarterback who has made a habit of making big plays, and we're going against a defense that has made a habit of giving up big plays. And I agree with you that the defense is looking more comfortable and more confident, but I will go back again to what Rutgers was able to do on third down from time to time. They were able to get the ball to where they needed, third and long every single time, and they were able to extend drives. So, really, the game is in Happy Valley. You've got a quarterback that is probably looking for a bounce back game in Penn State and Trace McSorley. And you've got a defense that all season long, the defensive line has struggled with getting to the quarterback.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. Yes.
You know, right. and then we have a secondary that has struggled in not giving up, you know, gashing plays. This to me just feels like a bad game for Wisconsin.
Well, you've got a secondary that's incredibly young when you're starting freshman and a true freshman back there. And you've got a defensive line that has, you pointed out, Dan, been non-existent in putting pressure on the quarterback. Now you've got a quarterback in there in McSorley who's hobbled. I mean, we're talking Aaron Rodgers, knee braces, and not looking comfortable, as Johnny alluded to in the last segment when he was playing against Michigan. But Michigan applied pressure. And if you don't get any pressure back there, and even with the knee brace on, he's able to sit in the pocket, and the only thing he has to do is move forward and backward in his drop back, and whether it's a 3-5 or 7-step drop, and you're not forcing him to move laterally at all,
right.
That is just going to be the nail in the coffin, because let's face it. I mean, I hear, you know, we had the huddle on before our show today, and all of the times that we hear about the Packers, when is Green Bay in trouble? When they can't get pass rush and the defensive backs are asked to be covering 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 seconds, it becomes virtually impossible if the quarterback is able to stand back there. Well, the same thing is happening to the Badgers, and it's happening to the Badgers when you're putting a secondary out there that's incredibly young. So they're learning through the process. They're not really having some time to mature, sit, wait, and then enter the game. They're just being thrown out into the fire. And as you said, all of that, the way things have evolved, unless somehow they figure out a way to put some pressure on the quarterback, it could be a very long day for Wisconsin fans.
Yeah, the only way that I see Wisconsin winning this game is the same type of style that they had planned to use when they were playing Michigan. That first half they played Michigan, they made a decision that it was going to be the running game, as you would expect. It's going to push them through, and you play a ball control offensive type of style of ball game to keep Penn State's game or offense off the field, which I think they're going to have to do again. I think it's their only option. You're going to need Cohn to hit some big passes. And I don't mean giant ones, just third and fives, third and six. He's going to have to get a couple of those and get it done, because no matter how good your running offense is, when you're that dependent upon the run, eventually the defense is going to catch up to you on third down, or they're going to get you in second and long. And then you have to throw the ball, and that is just not the confidence and the place where Wisconsin's going to win a football game. So unless Taylor and Deal and Groshek can just gash this defense, a defense which, by the way, is leading the Big Ten 7.4 tackles for losses per, you know, it's going to be a tough game for Wisconsin.
Here's the only thing, and Jeff, I'll throw this to you. It's the fact that you've got to be able to run the ball, and hopefully if you can maintain that running game, you get a defense, as we talked about again, with those in the know at Penn State, they get tired. They've been getting tired. They've been spending a lot of time on the field. If you can keep them on the field and you can get that running game, that gets a little bit demoralizing. The other thing is, you hope that maybe those passes that you were talking about, Dan, you start maybe getting a couple of those on first down, and to soften up the linebacking, that second level where you can soften them up, which then even makes the running game more effective. I'm just hoping that something is done offensively to keep them relevant and to keep them on the field, because that defense is just too young to be out there for too long.
Yeah, Jonathan Taylor needs to get off to a fast start. Have them bring the eighth guy into the box. Then, like you said, it opens up play action on first down, where if they open up the playbook for Cone, he can hit them. But it comes down to Taylor – A, getting off to a fast start. B, holding on to the ball and not putting it on the carpet.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Right. And then Paul Christ opening up the playbook. There's a lot of what ifs to get this offense to, A, dominate time of possession so you keep Penn State out, you know, on the sidelines, and B, to sit there and wear down their defense so you could take advantage of them all game long.
And Dan, I think Jeff just hit it right on the nose. It's dominating time of possession.
Mm-hmm.
And being able to put that defense has shown flashes where they've played incredibly well, and then it's a third down conversion or a penalty that has kept them back on the field. And then obviously as time keeps moving forward, they get exposed a little bit, and then that's where the big plays seem to hurt Wisconsin.
Yeah, I'll go back to that. Even in those instances where there's not a penalty, it's really about youth. We've seen it all season where, you know, our defensive backs are either A, out of position where their technique is not quite right, but it's I think you're going against a quarterback now that I would qualify as a veteran quarterback in the Big Ten. A quarterback that I think even on a bad knee is going to prove to give Wisconsin's defensive line fits. You know, unless you can get Van Ginkle to really kind of, you know, get into the backfield and push your linebackers in there, which again is going to soften up the defense in the middle. I think this is just a really tough test for Wisconsin.
I think it's an incredibly tough test, more so because it's in Happy Valley. I think if it was in Madison, I think because of the parallels that we drew in the last segment, I think it could be a tighter affair. It just seems like Penn State has had a way of kind of not being able to finish, even though they won a few close games.
Mm-hmm.
I mean,
yep.
You're looking at things like Indiana was 33-28. I mean, they're allowing teams that they shouldn't allow with the type of talent that they have in ball games, and in some cases not able to finish. That's where the losses come from. Let's put Michigan out of the discussion, because Michigan this year, as hard as it is to kind of swallow it, they are the elite team right now in the Big Ten. I think it might be a different affair had the game been at Camp Randall as opposed to Happy Valley.
I wonder. I guess I kind of argue that because we haven't seen a real dominating performance. Even, you know, even when Wisconsin, I'll quote unquote air quotes for everybody that can't see it, you know, dominates Illinois, it still didn't feel like a dominant game against Illinois.
No, you're right.
You know,
you're
and
right.
this last game against Rutgers, and granted, it's Rutgers and it's been a disappointing season. To be really honest with you, that stadium was as flat as I've seen it in a long, long time. There's usually a buzz when you walk into Camp Randall. And this time, I can't even come at the students for coming in late.
No,
if you looked around the stadium, the whole thing was just kind of, it was flat, and there were gaps all over the stadium.
A perfect segue after the break, because I do want to talk about that. And also want to get into some of the other games that happened nationally, because last week Saturday was a big day for college football, and we want to cover some of those that took place, including that Alabama-LSU game, and we'll get to it next. This is the College Football Show right here on 105.7 FM, The Fan. Once again, welcome back in to the College Football Show right here on 105.7 FM, The Fan, 1250 AM, or as always on the radio.com app. Before we got into the break, we'll make this one on the shorter side and cover it and then get into the week that was this past Saturday. But Dan, you alluded to it. It looked empty at Camp Randall, and I don't remember Camp Randall really looking that empty until we go all the way back to kind of pre-Barry Alvarez and maybe year number one of the Alvarez regime. It didn't look right. We've been spoiled really by looking at a capacity crowd and a lot of hoorah and
sure.
A lot of good football and we've been spoiled.
I guess we have.
Basically what it comes down to. And to see that student section as empty as it was, not only that, as you said before the break, all of the various pockets throughout Camp Randall, where it reminded me a bit of looking at Ryan Stadium down at Northwestern.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's and with the student section, because the students always end up arriving late. And a lot of that, again, if you do kind of your background, there was a great article in the Journal Sentinel last year about it's not totally the fault of the student section just trying to get them in there. But what I noticed in this game this year, just going to the game and getting season tickets, is just the pockets like you were talking about.
Yeah.
I think there's a couple things going on there. I mean, number one, there is a disappointing season factor. But number two, I mean, it's an 11 o'clock game. Number three, you've got great team, Rutgers, great team. And, you know, you're giving up an entire Saturday when you go to these games.
Yeah.
And do you really want to give up another Saturday for Rutgers?
Yeah.
You know,
I get what you're saying. I just wish they could find another way to expedite the students into the game.
Yeah, they need to.
Because I think the students are there, not maybe at full capacity, but many more are there than what we're seeing inside the stadium, because they're going through the whole security process, which I completely get. I completely understand and respect what those guys have to do on a game day basis to get the students in. I just wish there was a way that they could expedite it to get those students in there to start to get that energy level where it needs to be, because I think that had a little bit to do. I know it was Rutgers. I know the way we've been playing and all of that, but there's an energy level that the student section brings to those games, and that's why they're so valuable, and that's why home games are so important when we're looking at college football. We got to take another break. When we come back after the break, let's talk about the week that was, because there were a lot of good football games played this past Saturday, including that LSU-Alabama game, and we'll get to it next. This is, once again, the College Football Show right here, 105.7 FM, The Fan. Put your pinky rings up to the moon. Girls, what y'all trying to do? 24 karat magic in the Once again, welcome back in. College Football Show right here on 105.7 FM, The Fan, 1250 AM, and on the radio.com app. Guys, it was a great weekend as far as college football went, with some big marquee games, and none bigger than, I guess, Saturday night when we look at Alabama and LSU. And I don't know about you, but what I took away from it is something I think I already knew, is that it's Alabama. And everybody else is just trying to figure out where they can find a seat on the bus and maybe join them at that championship game before they get their tails handed to them.
Yeah, I think you're right. I just don't know that there's any team out there that can beat Alabama. You know, we're starting to get the push about Notre Dame. Now they've got their quarterback situation worked out, and people are getting excited about that. But, Alabama is so good, and Jeff alluded to it earlier, which is, you know, when Ed Orgeron is – walking up in the press conference after the game and just outright saying, we've got no answers to this.
Yeah.
You know, and, you know, think about what that takes for a coach in the same league to walk in and just walk up to in front of kind of a ravenous press corps and say, you know what, I got nothing. I don't know what to tell you.
He was extremely contrite, and he wasn't necessarily boastful before the game. I mean, he was pro LSU, obviously.
Sure.
I mean, he was all about his kids. He was all about, you know, just rooting for them, so to speak, and thinking they had the game plan. I think what threw me the most was people talking about the fact that LSU got shut out. There's point A, and they got shut out 29-0. That's one of the lowest offensive outputs that Alabama's had all year. So defensively, I thought LSU came to play, but it reminded me at a much higher level of play of what we've seen, Jeff, with Wisconsin, where defensively we make plays once in a while, we do something stupid, that puts Alabama back on the field, Alabama scores. And we've talked about that time and time again with the Badgers, where we get that what we think is a three and out, something crazy happens, next thing you know, the defense is back on the field, and then the other team capitalizes. LSU, though, as you said, Dan, you couple that with the fact offensively, Jeff, there was no answer to that Alabama defense.
Well, LSU has been terrible on offense for, what, 15 years now? you know, seriously, that's what ran Les Miles out of town.
Right.
You know, they haven't been able to draft a quarterback. They've had fantastic talent at skill positions, but they just can't get it done. And like you said, Alabama doesn't need much. You give them, you know, a penalty on third down, that gets them an automatic first, and they make you pay. You have a turnover, they make you pay. When LSU stopped Alabama on Alabama's first drive of the game, I thought, here we go. We're in for a good one.
Right.
And it didn't turn out that way.
No, you're right. I thought the same thing, Jeff, watching that, all right, LSU has answered the bell. Here we go. Even if they don't score, just moving the ball would have, I think, sufficed at that point. And they just had nothing. The play that astounded me was, I think it was the third quarter when Tua ran. It was like a 38-yard touchdown run where he scrambles and he steps up and he gets beyond the line of scrimmage and he gets about 10 yards down. And you could almost, at least you got the sense that he was trying to look around like, okay, I got to get ready to slide here because I got this bad wheel. And next thing you knew, he kind of looked over his shoulder and there wasn't anybody in front of him and 10 yards behind him. And he found that extra gear and just ran it right in the end zone. That kid is something special at quarterback right there.
Yeah, but again, leave it to Alabama. I mean, to find that type of talent, you know, coming out of Hawaii to start with, but then number two, that type of talent, Alabama is now the magnet for that type of talent. They're going to attract that. And yeah, I think, man, this kid's going to have a Heisman in his countertop at some point in the near future. And
it could very well be this year.
Yeah, it could be this year. And then there's the question about it, you know, how much longer do you want to stay at Alabama before you want to start making the real money?
Well, and then the kicker is his brother is being looked at, even though he's made a verbal commitment to Alabama, is being looked at by LSU. And who walks across the field with Bergeron before the game? It's Tua's brother with an LSU lanyard marching right across midfield, just all smiles. Why wouldn't you be? He's got every major school in the country courting him. His brother is tearing college football up. It's a good time to be Tua's younger brother right now.
Oh, of course. Good. Yeah, good time to be his parents. Good time to be his first cousin. Anybody who's going to see any peanuts off the checks that those guys are going to be cashing on Sundays. There was a story that came out today. There were a couple of Vegas odds makers because, you know, with as dominant as Alabama's been, the talk is now – you know, how could they compete with, say, the Buffalo Bills with Nathan Peterman at quarterback? You know, it's the same thing that happens every year. So these odd makers made a line for a hypothetical Alabama versus Buffalo Bills matchup.
Okay, wait. Let us guess.
Okay.
I have not seen it.
Okay.
So it's a hypothetical, he says five times fast.
Point spread.
Point spread between Alabama and Buffalo.
Buffalo.
Neutral site, or does it say?
It doesn't say, okay. But let's call it neutral.
We'll call it neutral. I'll take Alabama.
Oh, no, it is on a neutral site. Yes, okay. It is. Yes, it is.
I'll take Alabama 6.5-point favorite. Dan?
Ooh. I'm going to go higher. I'm going to go 10.
All right.
Okay, so you Alabama 10-point favorites, yep. Alabama 6-point favorites.
6.5, yeah.
The Buffalo Bills would be favored by 28.5 points.
Really?
Wow.
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah. Neutral site, Bama versus the god-awful Buffalo Bills. Actual Vegas odds makers would put the Bills at 28.5-point favorites.
But I'll say this. After partaking in Vegas over time, I would tend to go with the odds makers.
Miss Wachillis, turn off the radio.
Oh, I think the secret's out.
Yeah. They tend to know what they're talking about. Those lines hit and miss every so often. Mm-hmm. But overall, those guys tend to know exactly where they're putting and dropping the half point and, you know, the hook and everything else that goes along with it. Let me ask you guys this. Is Alabama good for college football? A team that just dominates the way they are and the way they have. Is it good for college football, Dan?
I don't think it's avoidable. For a while, Miami was the team that dominated college football. Then we get to Alabama. I think every maybe once a generation, there's a team that pops up for a certain amount of years that is just undefeatable. And right now, it's Alabama's turn to do that. You know, I'm always of the mind it's cyclical. It's going to go away at some point. You know, Nick Saban's going to retire. It's and Alabama will not be the same Alabama not soon after that point, but. Is it bad for college football? Well, you know, guess what? We're talking about it. Here we are. So it does give you, it gives a sports fan, a bad guy to root against, kind of a Yankees kind of a thing where when Alabama is only up by 7 in the third quarter, you go, whoa, maybe something could happen. It makes it more interesting.
Jeff?
Yeah, I agree. I don't think Alabama's bad for college football. It's not like they've won 4 or 6 national titles in a row. It's not like how I feel about UConn and women's college basketball.
Okay.
I think UConn is awful for women's college basketball because they've won, you know, the last 8,000 titles in a row. They don't lose a game. You know, they lose, what, one game every 4 years? So you know going in you're playing for second place. Alabama's good at losing in playoff bowl games. They've lost their fair share of those. They usually, you know, a lot of times will lose a game during the regular season as well. So it's not just sheer dominance. And so, therefore, I don't think it's bad, and they give us a good villain.
I think there's one other thing to take in account, too, is that Alabama has to cycle through players every 4 to 5 years. They're not the same guys. We're having this conversation in class today about what the NBA does about the problem of super teams. Oh, hey, we're going to watch Golden State win another championship. Yippity-doo-dah, you know?
Right.
This is it's Alabama's year this year. This stuff just happens. They're the best team in college football, and they've been really good for a long time. But to Jeff's point, they don't always win. But, how do they not win the national championship this year?
Okay, so that was headed right where I'm going with this next question to you guys. Right now, the Final Four sits as this: Alabama at the top, Clemson at 2, Notre Dame at 3, Michigan at 4. Of those four, who would have the best chance of knocking off Alabama as it stands today, knowing that that could obviously change in the next couple of weeks?
I would go Clemson, Michigan, and then Notre Dame.
Jeff? I can only choose those four. I can't take defending champion UCF.
Well, UCF would have to jump right now, what, about?
Well, they're 12th.
15 spots?
They're 12th. They're not getting the respect they deserve. I line them up the exact same way as Underberg. He's the professor for a reason.
Yes, sir. That's why we bring him on board. Last week.
It's for my looks.
And that's why we're on the radio, huh? Kentucky takes on Georgia. Georgia absolutely just ruined Kentucky's, I guess, walk down the aisle, so to speak. I mean, I love the fact that the basketball program canceled practice so that everybody could watch the football game. What has happened to Kentucky football this year? And I'm not a huge Kentucky basketball fan, so to speak, but I just love the fact that the football team has, at least this year, kind of risen to somewhat of the level of the basketball program, and then kind of the whole school spirit thing that goes around when really life in Kentucky is all about basketball.
Oh, yeah.
The fact that the football program got a taste of the limelight a little bit, but ran into a really good Georgia team who's really bounced back after an ugly loss to LSU, beating Kentucky 34-17. And Dan, your favorite coach in the world, the head coach at Michigan, obviously, he's got that team in the Final Four, and that's a team that I don't know if at the beginning of the year, with the loss to Notre Dame,
mm-hmm.
I remember sitting in this chair, and I know the tape exists, and I thought, you know, if the Badgers are rolling, the Badgers beat Michigan in Michigan, it could be the end of Harbaugh, and now I just have to sit and watch the fact that, as you like to call Mr. Khaki Pants, has got that team up in that four
mm-hmm.
that could, the way they're playing, could find its way for a bowl berth that would lead to a potential national championship.
It's going to come down to the Ohio State game again. That's where we will find out how good Michigan really is. If Michigan beats Ohio State, then put them in the Final Four. Have no problem with that. But until they overcome that hurdle, which they haven't done since, you know, the Wright brothers invented the plane, it's going to take that kind of game for me to believe in Michigan. They're having a great season this year, and they're beating teams with purpose, or they're whipping Wisconsin, they're whipping Penn State, and that's all well and good, but there's this silver shiny helmet waiting for them at the end of the season, and that's going to be when I decide whether or not they're worthy of a playoff position or not.
All right, so let's talk about Ohio State for a moment, because Ohio State just gets by Nebraska 36-31, and then we get the news from Pat Forty on the Dan Patrick Show, and I'm just going to paraphrase, is that he doesn't believe Urban Meyer will be back next year with Ohio State. There's all of a sudden in the last couple of weeks these rumblings, Jeff, about Urban Meyer going bye-bye for a number of various reasons, including health, including relationships with the administration and so forth after what took place earlier this year. And suddenly a team that even though was exposed at times was still so powerful that they could roll through. Now, Nebraska's gotten a little bit of confidence, but let's face it, it's still Nebraska, and they had a really tough time last Saturday. I don't know if now this talk with Urban Meyer is starting to affect this team, which then makes me think that when Michigan goes to Ohio State, this could be finally the year Harbaugh gets over the hump.
Well, we'll see. You know, the it's like the snowball rolling downhill now for Ohio State, and things aren't looking as you know, rosy as they were. They don't look like quite the professional football team that they are. But they are going to get up for that Michigan game. That is their national title game. You know, they have a very outside chance because of how poorly they have played against these teams to make the playoff. So it's all or nothing in that Michigan game.
It's time to take another break. When we come back, not only did we have some disruption in Division I football, we saw the same thing happen this past Saturday at the Division III level. Let's talk about those games, the top 25, and what the outlook is for some of those teams now as the playoffs are just around the corner, and we'll be right around the corner next after the break. This is the College Football Show right here, 105.7 FM, The Fan. Once again, welcome in to the College Football Show right here on 105.7 FM, The Fan. Sometimes
I think I heard this song in a movie before, Don.
Yeah.
I can't remember what it was called, but I think I heard it in a movie.
If you know Orlowski, he's probably got it as one of the 12 CDs in his changer out in the car, bopping as he makes his way his way down the road. Oh, my goodness. How do we get this one back on track? All right. We don't. Yeah, we let it go. Let's talk a little D3 football as we had some upsets this past Saturday, and probably none more headline-grabbing than the fact that Oshkosh fell to Eau Claire 20-14, and by Oshkosh losing to Eau Claire and picking up their third loss of the year, not only did they fall to number 3 in the WEAC, they completely fell out of the top 25. And Dan, Oshkosh was one of those teams that we thought was in the running for an at-large bid, as we've got one more week in the regular season. And by next week, we're going to start talking about what the playoffs are going to look like in that at the NCAA Division III level. And we thought potentially Oshkosh would be in the mix, as I said, for that at-large bid. But now with the loss to Eau Claire, statement Saturday reared its ugly head at the Division III level within the WEAC conference.
Yeah, unfortunately for Oshkosh, there's no way that they're getting in. Their season will end with their last game on Saturday. I don't think any one of us expected Eau Claire to pop up the way that they did. It seemed like Oshkosh was really starting to find their stride. So, you know, it's unfortunate for the Titans. Eau Claire gets a huge win, one that they can build upon for maybe the next season and when they're doing the recruiting and really kind of getting things straight for 2019. So that one, again, sitting in Camp Randall, and they'll do their WEAC scores probably twice a game, looking up and see that score. And, you know, I was floored when I saw that.
I know. I was too. You look at it and go, somebody goofed it up.
Yeah, somebody goofed it up. Right.
Mm-hmm. Tight game, but somebody goofed it up. And When you dig through and you start looking at some of the stats, and again, Oshkosh has had their kind of ups and downs this year, where we know they lost to a Division II school. That was one of the losses. And we know they lost to Whitewater. Whitewater absolutely on a roll. We'll get to them next. But you still had the idea as the way things went. Oshkosh handled lacrosse. Lacrosse right now sitting in second place in the WEAC. I mean, they were taking care of business, especially when they beat Platteville. They kind of had that fourth quarter against Platteville where they exploded, and you thought, all right, now here goes Oshkosh on their run as well. And again, they just they seem to have had these moments where they've been up and down all over the charts, and they just, again, that they got down at the wrong moment against an Eau Claire team that has played pretty well this year. That's a team that, you know, at times has looked really good, and at times has looked really poor.
Yep.
And you can say that through the course of a four-quarter game, where one quarter they look lights out, and then the next quarter it's like they hadn't taken the field ever before. So Eau Claire found a way to keep it together. Whitewater continues to keep it together. A 59-7 whooping of UW-Stevens Point. Whitewater's got one more game to go to stay undefeated throughout the WEAC. They're playing Platteville. Now, it wasn't that long ago we saw that as a key game, but Platteville has just kind of fallen off the face of the earth. Stout beats them this past week, 38-33. The other game in the WEAC, excuse me, is La Crosse as they take care of River Falls, 29-14. So as I said, Whitewater undefeated, sitting in first place. La Crosse right now, with two losses, moves into that second place slot ahead of Oshkosh. Whitewater still ranked number 5 in the country. So obviously people around the U.S. understanding what Whitewater is accomplishing within the WEAC. But now that's it. We started the year with three, in one case, four teams, all from the WEAC in the top 25. And now we're sitting here looking at Whitewater, the lone remaining WEAC member that will automatically head to the Division III playoffs. But they're going to be our only hope. I said to you off the air, Dan, right now, with the way the state of football is within our borders, Whitewater is the team if you got somebody you need to support, and I'm quite sure the Whitewater bandwagon will slow down long enough for you to hop on right now. They're not going to have any problem whatsoever. But what we've seen happen in Green Bay, what we've seen happen in Madison, right now Whitewater is the team to really root for because they have a legitimate shot once again at a national championship.
Yeah, getting back to the Stag Bowl and you know, going back against their natural nemesis out there. It's really early to say this, but they are on such a roll.
Yeah.
Heading into the playoffs. I can't imagine, again, 59-7. You know, we were given their head coach, was it last week or 2 weeks ago, a hard time about how, what did they give up, 10 points or 7? You know,
it was like 14.
Yeah,
or
something like that. So, you know, they're still below 7 points a game.
Right.
For their average.
Right.
The points given up below 7 points a game. And I don't know, with their offense producing the way it is, if I'm a gambling man, if I was making a dalliance out in Vegas, you know, with you, it wouldn't, you know.
You didn't say bet. You said dalliance.
Dalliance. Yes.
That is dalliance. Why you are the professor.
Yeah. I kind of tripped over that word. But it's right now, I get that they're rated number 5.
Yeah.
But how are they not the favorite to plow through the playoffs and get to that Stag Bowl?
Well, you know, part of what we've been discussing with regards to the top 25 at the Division III level, is the fact that part of it goes to notoriety, part of it goes to kind of this foundation that's been built over time. And we saw Whitewater last year take a little bit of a stumble, take a little bit of a step back, and the Mountain Unions of the world, amongst others, are continuing to roll. So I think when those that vote, who have a vote in putting in the top 25, you're still looking at those teams who have continually, even with only a one-year absence by Whitewater, the fact that there's some continuation with those other programs, I think that's where the nod goes when you start to look at who's slightly ahead of where Whitewater is.
Sure. I think that's a Warhawk team that's ready to show the nation who they are and that they're back again. I think it's going to be fun watching that team and watching them go through the playoffs. I think is going to be a good time. We've talked about this too, about the WEAC, and there's always the fear about this conference, which is it's so good it's going to beat each other up.
Yeah,
and I think that's exactly what we saw here. Are there teams viable for playing in the national playoffs? Absolutely. You know, and I totally recognize that you can say that about other conferences, but not at the depth of the WEAC. But this time, you know, you've got a pretty fair, equitable distribution of these teams in terms of talent, and they were able to beat, each other up pretty good, with the exception of Whitewater.
Yeah, last week, Dan, we had the head coach at St. Norbert, Dan McCarty, join us, because that team up there at St. Norbert is on kind of the precipice of getting themselves into the Division III playoff picture as well. They beat Beloit College last Saturday 60-0. This is a team that has now beaten – here are just some of the scores. This is unbelievable. So they beat Beloit College 60-0. A couple of weeks ago, they took care of Lawrence University 46-0. They beat Knox College 34-0. And this one, I didn't have the heart to ask because I didn't want to put Coach in a situation. They beat Grinnell College 91-0.
Whoa.
91-0. You want to talk about watching your offensive stats off the charts as far as the season goes? 91, 61, 40. This is a team that can put points on the board, but
keep
defensively,
the other team off. Yeah.
Yeah, but defensively is also doing a job by holding teams to 7, 17, 20. I mean, they did show against the University of Chicago they can win a close game. They won 21-20. But they also shown they can blow teams out with a 91-0 win. They have a game this Saturday at home against Monmouth, and they'll be playing for the NWC Championship. The winner there gets the automatic berth into the Division III playoff system. So as much as we believe and kind of are assured the fact that Whitewater, based on their record at this point, are going to automatically get in with the WEAC automatic berth, we could see St. Norbert doing that as well. The one that surprised, and we need to bring this one up, was Concordia, who has had a very, very successful season and was making a pitch for their conference championship, Dan, and they kind of took it on the chin last Saturday.
Yeah, it was. I was talking to one of the coaches, you know, walking through the parking lot and talking about that, and they really felt that both of the teams that played last week, it was Concordia and Eureka, and really – a really high-scoring game settled in the last 18 seconds with Eureka walking away with the win. That game was so taxing leading up to last weekend's game. Both of them were just kind of out of sorts. Eureka ended up losing last week too. And so Concordia had the opportunity to win a ball game that would have put them back neck and neck with the lead, and unfortunately they weren't able to do it. They took it pretty hard. I believe they lost 24-0, and that's a hard pill to swallow at this point in the season. So now the Falcons are looking for help. It's too bad, because that is a team, and when you're involved in that atmosphere and you begin to sense that people are getting excited about it,
yeah,
and this is our opportunity, and then the brutal, you know, the agony defeat steps in. And you never know when it's going to hit.
It's that feeling Kentucky's going through, yeah, after they went up
true.
Against Georgia, where
that's
you
true.
Had all this elation, all this hope, and then suddenly somebody pulls the rug out from under you. We got to take a break. When we come back, let's look ahead at some of the games that are happening this Saturday. And then I also want to pose this question to you, gentlemen. Mathematically, the Badgers are still in the hunt for an opportunity to go to the Big Ten championship game. Do we even want them there?
No.
We'll talk about it next. You're supposed to wait, Daniel. We'll talk about it next. This is the College Football Show right here on 105.7 FM, The Fan. All the time. Disc number 7 on the Jeff Orlowski disc changer outside in the car. Way to bring the music in, Jeff. Appreciate
it. Oh, I love it.
Oh, it just sets up a whole different conversation.
My.
Welcome back to the College Football Show right here on 105.7 FM, The Fan, as we get set to look at some of the games that we're going to be looking at for this upcoming week, especially with some of those teams, as we alluded to earlier, in the Final Four kind of box that has been set for the playoff system. But first of all, before we get to that, guys, as I said, the Badgers still not mathematically eliminated. My favorite joke is back, I don't know how many years ago, when Letterman would come on that first day of baseball and he'd go, "Ladies and gentlemen, the Cleveland Indians have been mathematically eliminated on opening day." These numbers indicate that the Badgers mathematically are still alive. Do we want to see the Badgers run the table and get the berth into the Big Ten championship game? Or are we afraid, like I am, that if they do get there, bet the house on whoever they're playing?
Jeff?
I want them to get there. And I don't care if they lose 120-0. I want them to make that game because I don't want to have to fake excitement for the Gasparilla Bowl or the Bad Boy Buggy Bowl. If they make the Big Ten, you know, final, then, you know, you're looking at the citrus, you know, at least it's got a little bit of respectability. You know, it's something that you could kind of talk yourself in a drunken moment into. But, you know, the Bad Boy Buggy Bowl just doesn't do it for me.
I wasn't kidding earlier when I said one of the projections was the fact that the Badgers could end up around where it's not San Francisco. Was it Santa Clara where the 49ers play?
Yeah.
But the Red Box Bowl. Nobody even uses DVDs anymore, and yet we still have the Red Box Bowl. Dan, that goes back to, what was it, mid-80s when we made it to the Garden State Bowl,
right,
and we were jumping for joy because the Badgers hadn't been to a bowl in who knows how many years.
Yep.
It's got that feeling again.
Well, at least it's not the Blockbuster Bowl. I guess I have to disagree a little bit with Jeff. I think if you put a Wisconsin team the way they're playing right now into the championship game, I think it does more damage than good. I think if they walk out there and get blown away again, and we're supposedly going for recruits that might be considering Wisconsin in addition to something like a Michigan or maybe Ohio State, that kind of seals the deal on where these guys might want to play. Yeah, I don't want to go to a team that is so much worse than a Michigan or Ohio State.
Yeah,
I'd rather lick our wounds, not get that. Into that Big Ten championship game and maybe have to play at the Blockbuster Bowl, the Red Box Bowl, then really just, you know, take it on the chin publicly, potentially twice. You know, you get into the Big Ten championship game, you lose bad, and then you get into a Citrus Bowl or something like that, you play a decent team again, and then you underwhelm the national media and the national audience again. I, you know, every now and again, you got to course correct, and this might be their opportunity to do it.
All right, a couple of games this week to keep an eye on. Alabama at home against Mississippi State. Mississippi State ranks 16, so no pushover there. You've got Northwestern at Iowa, which should be a good matchup. Michigan's got Rutgers, so Michigan will stay within the Final Four after that contest. Here's two that I want to bring up real quick because I know we'll get up against a break here shortly. First one, Florida State at Notre Dame. Now, I heard an argument on another show in which it was Notre Dame having an easy path into the playoff. Nobody 5-10 years ago, and we've talked about this ad nausea with regards to when you're setting up these non-conference games, or if you're Notre Dame, just setting up your schedule. You have to do it so far in advance. Nobody, I think, would have thought USC, Florida State, some of these teams that Notre Dame is playing would be having the type of year they're having.
Mm-hmm.
So when you talk about a perfect storm, if you're a Notre Dame fan, you've gotten it this year. Because really right now the next big test will be for Notre Dame what they call their home game at Yankee Stadium against Syracuse, where Syracuse is playing really well. I think you would have thought the Syracuse game would be more like the Florida State game is this week for Notre Dame, where you just kind of, okay, we'll go in, we'll take care of business against Syracuse, and we'll really get tested against Florida State. And this year, as the way the football gods are, it's completely reversed.
Yeah, that's you can't blame Notre Dame for that. And Jeff, you've pointed out a bunch of times that it's time to fix this process where we're writing contracts 7 years into the future, and it has no bearing on that, and yeah, you're totally right about it. But, I mean, the reality is the system is the way the system is right now. It's nobody's fault. You know, when Notre Dame signs up to play Florida State is one of those legacy teams you assume that they're going to be good for a long time,
yeah,
ongoing, like you would a Florida, you know, like you would a Miami, just kind of that center of football down there, like you would a Central Florida. It just didn't happen. So do you blame Notre Dame? No, but I think Notre Dame is kind of setting itself up for, just a massive reality check, whether that's in the playoffs or maybe against Syracuse in Yankee Stadium.
We'll have to see how they play against Syracuse as far as how the reality check may turn out once they get to the playoffs, but I agree. They have not played anybody outside of Michigan week one, and Michigan was a much different team week one than they are now.
Right.
With the type of speed, physicality that you're finding in Clemson and what you're finding in, obviously, Alabama. Jeff, this one goes to you. Here's my game of the week coming into this upcoming Saturday on the 10th of November, and that's UCF against Navy. I think this is going to be a huge test for UCF to see whether or not they can keep that undefeated streak going, because Navy finds a way to grind on people with the style of football that they play.
Yeah, you know, Navy's one of those teams that, you know, they don't have great talent, but they get under your skin. And, you know, the things that you don't do well, they will make you go, you know, and have to like, if you don't defend the run well, they're going to run it down your throat 800 times. If you have problems, you know, defending crossing routes, they're going to run crossing routes on you all day long. They just get under your skin. They're an annoyance, and it's going to be a heck of a battle.
Well, Navy, with that triple option and the fact that they are made up of a group of young men who you will never argue their toughness.
Exactly.
Army, Navy, Air Force, you're never going to argue their toughness. I mean, those guys, what they go through besides just training camp in football terms is got them set to really grind some things out. And I just think it's going to be interesting to see. Everybody knows what Navy does. Everybody knows what Army does. Everybody knows what Air Force does. They run such a similar style of offense. Can UCF match, and can UCF then defensively stop it? Even though you know it's coming, it's not always easy to stop. And I just think this could be the week where the committee, the college football committee, takes a collective breath, because I think this is where the first loss comes from.
No.
No, I don't think so.
No?
No. No, in UCF I trust.
Yeah. Oh. And I don't think the committee is even concerned about UCF. I don't think they're
I don't think it's necessarily the committee. Maybe it's the pressure, I think, by some on the committee to boost them higher than number 12. Now, I'll be honest with you. Over 2 years of being undefeated, I think 12 could be a little bit low. But I also understand when you're looking at the level of opponents that they've had, it has not necessarily been with some of the others. But you got teams with 2 and 3 losses that are ahead of an undefeated team. I get why UCF feels disrespected.
Well, yeah, I agree with that. You know, when you're playing at a high level in your pond, so to speak, I mean, you expect to get the attention that you feel is deserving of you. But the reality is UCF's pond is a lot smaller and a lot shallower than the SEC pond or the ACC pond that's around them. You know, it's not the same. And so, yeah, I get it. You know, there are other teams that are ranked ahead of them that may have 2 losses and their frustration, I understand. But, I think you guys will understand, this is also the team that did itself a disservice by giving itself its own title banner.
No.
You know?
I'd argue with that, because I think by them giving their own title banner, they've made themselves relevant. They've kept themselves in a conversation from a PR perspective, not necessarily from the quality of play perspective, but from a PR perspective. We still talk about the fact that they had their own parade. They threw their own parade. They flew their own banner.
Uh-huh.
They got rings.
And they got rings, and whether or not they deserved it, I just think it kept them relevant in a conversation that, even though they could have been undefeated, could have been easily dismissed.
Yeah, I think it's a gimmick, and I think there's relevant in the media, and there's relevant in terms of the football mindset, like the committee, in other words, where they look at this and say, come on, are you serious? I think it's something for us to talk about in the studio, but I don't think that kind of move helps them in terms of the credibility of the program.
You know what other team that isn't getting a lot of respect? They're not undefeated, but that's Fresno State. If you get a chance late night on a Saturday night, and you're on that third or fourth game on a Saturday, and you know, you're watching the West Coast stuff, and it's usually like a CBS Sports Network
mm-hmm.
type affair, Fresno State can play some football. Fresno State, to me, if I had to make an equivalent, reminds me of what UNLV used to be back in the day with Grandmama when Larry Johnson was running up and down the floor. Remember how UNLV was just like, it was just run and gun? And I'm not saying that Fresno State then has an opportunity for a national championship by any means, but if you want to watch a fun style of offense, Fresno State, and only sitting at 23, that's another team that I could see up a little bit higher, maybe somewhere in that 15 to 20 range. I think the fact that they're only 23 is a bit disrespectful to a team that's playing really well right now.
Are they on the Ocho, or do you have to go all the way down the dial to, like, the Dose to find the Fresno State game?
Not only that, you better have, like, some aluminum foil hooked onto the broomstick and attach that to the TV in order to find that game, especially late night. Those sometimes, like, remember how Hawaii used to be when Hawaii was run and shoot,
mm-hmm.
and you'd get that game pop on around 11:15 at night? It's a great way to cap off a fun Saturday of football, I'll tell you that. All right, let's take our last break of the evening, and we come back. As always, it'll be time to shovel the funk. We'll do it next. It's the College Football Show right here on 105.7 FM, The Fan.
You know what? I want to shovel the funk. I want to shovel the funk. I want to shovel the funk. I feel like shovel the funk. I got to shovel the funk. You want to shovel the funk? Do you want to shovel the funk? Then go ahead. One, go.
Once again, welcome back in for the final segment of the College Football Show. Shovel the Funk is being brought to you by Americana Apparel. Whether you need t-shirts for an upcoming event or team jerseys and gear, Americana Apparel has you covered. Owner Jim Van Acker will provide you with unparalleled quality and service for all your custom silk screening and embroidery needs. Check them out on their website at AmericanaApparelLLC.com. Once again, that's AmericanaApparelLLC.com. Americana Apparel, the official outfitters of the College Football Show. All right, gentlemen, time to hand out your shovels to the pipe bomb. Mr. Orlowski, I start with you, sir. Go ahead.
All right, to the College Football Playoff Committee, UCF. We talked about them a lot today. It's a beautiful thing. 12th in right now in the rankings, undefeated. They finished a year undefeated, national champions last year, ended the season at 6th. You know, this is a team, they have one four-star recruit. They have no one in the top ESPN 300. This is a team, they're not getting Alabama cast-offs. And it's not their fault that they don't play against top quality talent. Underberg, last segment, you said you can't blame Notre Dame because Florida State isn't a powerhouse. They probably were when they booked them 12 years ago.
Yes, they did.
You can't blame UCF for who's in their conference.
He brings in the music. He's all fired up. Oh, what are you going to do with this guy today?
Dan, no, we can continue to debate that. But no, it's. Look, I'd do this two ways real quick. Number one, I'm going to give some love to Eau Claire. You know, they've had the up and down season. They come in. We've talked about how we expected, Oshkosh to kind of run the table and get to the playoffs. But let's give some love to the University of Wisconsin Eau Claire for that win. It's a big win for them.
Sure is.
Program changing, I don't know, but it's one that needs to be recognized. Other one, real quick, I got to make this a little personal. To my students at Concordia University of Wisconsin, man. For all the work you did in the roundtable last week, thank you so much. You were wonderful.
And for those that were able to get out there, Dan, congratulations to you and those guys because you put on an absolutely wonderful event out there at Concordia. My shovel this week is going to Whitewater. Whitewater still sitting undefeated, ranked number 5 in the country. They'll take on Platteville in Platteville this Saturday, 1 o'clock, with an automatic berth to the Division III playoff series on the line. It's time for us to get up out of here. Want to thank John McGonigal from the Center Daily newspaper there in Happy Valley for helping us preview the upcoming Wisconsin-Penn State affair. Don't forget, after the Bucks game tonight, it's the Pick and Save Pro Hoops postgame show with Steve Sparky Pfeiffer as the Bucks taking on the Golden State Warriors. For the Polish Pipe Bomb, Jeff Orlowski, the Professor Dan Underberg, I'm Don Wachilis. Thank you so much for spending the last couple of hours joining us here to talk a little college football. We'll be back in 6:22. Have a great weekend. Watch out for the snow.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.